I'm wondering, has surgery been studied in comparison to non-surgical treatments or interventions for obesity-related diabetes? Is it equally effective?
It's actually more effective. And one of the other studies that was published last August in New England Journal of Medicine was the long-term results of the Swedish obesity subjects trial. This is a trial that had a comparative group of individuals who were treated with conventional lifestyle and, in some cases, medications long-term for their obesity. And the other group was treated with surgery, actually three different types of operations, and they have been followed now up to 18 years. And what was published in August were the results of the mortality data, which is arguably the most important outcome. And they showed in this study that the adjusted mortality risk decreased by 29% in the surgical group compared to the medical group. And the cause of mortality, as you might expect, was cardiovascular related in the non-surgical group, as well as cancer. So these two studies provide very strong evidence that not only is surgery superior to medical and, you know, lifestyle treatments for the severely obese, but it also results in long-term improved survival, which is a very, very important endpoint. And physicians, I believe, need to adjust their practice with this new information in mind.
Any specific studies to gastric banding versus lifestyle change and lifestyle change?
Yes, and the very active group led by John Dixon and Paul O'Brien conducted a very nice randomized controlled trial that was published a year ago in Annals of Internal Medicine for patients who had a lower degree of obesity, actually BMI 30 to 35. And the medical group had a very aggressive medical weight loss program with a protein, liquid protein type of very low calorie diet compared to the band group. And what they showed that, interesting, at 6 months, the weight loss was about the same. But as you go out further, as you might expect, those that had the medical or the diet weight loss actually regained nearly all of their weight. But the surgical group at 2 years had a substantially greater weight loss and, most importantly, maintenance of that weight loss.
And just what we talked about in the beginning is that we can lose the weight, but the problem is the maintenance with medical therapy. So, you know, we just don't have the medical wherewithal to have people lose the weight and keep it off like we've seen in the surgical procedures.
You know, and that that factor is probably the greatest attribute of the surgical approach, is the durability. And I think, again, the Swedish obesity subject study, which has follow-up up to 18 years, has shown that after that initial weight loss, which occurs in the first 1 to 2 years, while there might be some weight regain, most of that weight loss, and the initial weight loss, is maintained 10, 15, and 18 years. And that's what's important in terms of reducing the long-term morbidity and mortality associated with obesity and type 2 diabetes.
Well, let's talk with another patient who developed obesity-related diabetes and who chose to have bariatric surgery. Terry, a patient of Dr. Blackstone, who lives in Mesa, Arizona, recently had placement of an adjustable gastric band.
I work at a casino, and I'm a supervisor.
We'll be right with you, sir.
I work afternoons. I'd wake up and it's breakfast and get ready, go to work. So exercise was like zero. You know, when do I exercise? I would get out of work at midnight and stop and get fast food. The weight issues began after I had my daughter. I was 41 at the time. I did become gestational diabetic, and that did go away. That's when a lot of the issues began, the high cholesterol, the blood pressure, and then it just continually got worse and worse. You know, I like to cook. I enjoy eating. My culture, we eat a lot of fattening stuff. I do the tacos, the enchiladas, the rice, the tortillas, you know, potatoes, meat and potatoes. It seems like you go at a restaurant and you get these big portions, and I finished my plate, yeah. I was a good eater. I just couldn't discipline myself to not eat, you know, maybe order a salad. No, I want the steak, I want the fried food. And so that was my lifestyle. Not a good lifestyle. 2.5 years ago, I went to my family doctor and found that I was diabetic. So he prescribed medication. I was fortunate that I wasn't to the insulin stage, but it could have gotten there. Diabetes does run in the family. I've tried a lot of the different fad diets, tried exercise, different diet drinks. I didn't see any progress, and you get so frustrated when you're trying and trying and nothing's really happening. About a year ago, I was scheduled for the bypass, and I became nervous. I was scared. I started researching the band and went to the seminars with Dr. Blackstone and found that because it is less invasive than the other, I decided to go with that one.
Hey, Terry.
The adjustable gastric band has demonstrated just recently in a randomized controlled trial that it is extremely effective for type 2 diabetes. It seems that it's related to weight loss, so that patients who have an adjustable gastric band have to lose their weight in order to get their diabetes to go into remission. But if they are really working on the program and losing their weight with the band, then it can go into remission about 80% of the time.
You've lost so much weight already. I'm so excited for you.
Terry's health status is really improving rapidly. She already is off the medication that she was taking to help her insulin work better, and is controlling her blood sugars pretty much right now with diet and exercise.
You've done really good. You have.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much. I'm really faithful as far as this is what I should eat, this is what I don't eat.
It's good.
Thank you. I follow the rules and the exercise. They advise us to walk 10,000 steps a day. I would walk for like an hour and a half, just walk. Since I have lost the weight, the simplest thing, just walking from the parking lot at work into the building is easier. Climbing stairs is easier. I'm just a different me now. I feel so good.
You know, one of the things about Terry that I think is really well illustrated by her story is that she was really interested and motivated about this because she wanted to be there for her family as she got older. She wanted to be performing better on her job. But, you know, a lot of physicians mistake the main reason that patients come for care is that it's something about their appearance, something cosmetic. And, you know, there's not a person on the planet who doesn't look better if they've lost 50 or 100 pounds, if they need to. But the most important thing that people come for is that their bones, their joints don't hurt anymore. They don't take all those medications anymore. They're not going to be at risk to lose their limbs or develop kidney failure from their diabetes. And patients are very informed about this, and they're very motivated, really, from the health behavior changes.
I think, too, with Terry's case, she had very realistic expectations going into the procedure and achieved that weight loss, and she feels better, she's more active, and that will facilitate her own well-being, but continue to facilitate weight loss. So, as we talked about before, I think having realistic expectations about weight loss, whether they're going on to bariatric surgery or not, is very important for the patients.
And also, I think this notion of a surgery and not really being a panacea by itself. Just like some of the other therapies we've already talked about, surgery is most effective when it's used in combination with these other, proven approaches.
And, patients often can't do all that on their own. So it's really important for them to go to a program that has access to good support groups, good nutritional counseling, and really thorough and good follow-up and accountability post-op.
Yeah, I think the surgery is a tool, and it's a tool to be able to facilitate their lifestyle changes. You know, everyone think, oh, it's an easy way out to having surgery. It's really not. It's a continued lifetime lifestyle change, and the surgery that these individuals do are just tools that impact greatly on a number of patients' lives.
We know, however, that bariatric surgery is not for every patient. Dr. Still, how do you know when to recommend surgery for a patient?
Well, getting back to what we talked about initially, you need to know the patient's body mass index. The National Institutes of Health criteria are if a body mass index of 40 or more, or a body mass index of 35 with a comorbid medical problem, such as diabetes or sleep apnea or high cholesterol. They have to have reasonable attempts of prior weight loss, and that is anywhere from 4 to 6 months. And what that means, I believe, is that surgery shouldn't be their first line treatment for weight loss. They should, and most of our patients, and I'm sure Robin and Phil's patients have tried multiple years of weight loss. They have to also be free of any major psychiatric problems, and they have to be compliant and have an understanding of the changes that they have to make lifelong.
I'm wondering, do patients need to consider how many other options before they get to surgery? Or let me turn it around a little bit. Sometimes are doctors and patients not aggressive enough in getting to bariatric surgery with their patients?
I think there's no question that when we see patients, you know, Phil and I, we're seeing them really when they've already got sleep apnea, hypertension, diabetes, and some when they even have cardiovascular disease. In our opinion, these patients have gone through years of therapy, of various different kinds of medical therapy, some self-driven, some supervised. A lot of them have taken, you know, part of commercially available programs for weight loss. And by the time we get them, we wish we had them earlier because their risk for surgery would be less if they weren't as sick when they came.
And well, Chris pointed out quite correctly that surgery is not first-line therapy. What we typically see, as Robin pointed out, patients continue to try the same methods over and over again with the same results, minimal weight loss. And unfortunately, during this period, which may be years actually, diabetes as a progressive disease continues to worsen. And we see the secondary complications of diabetes set in, the retinopathy, renal failure, and some of these, of course, are irreversible. So while certainly surgery should not be considered first, but we think that physicians should not delay too long in at least informing the patients about the option of surgery.
Phil, in addition to the NIH criteria, what are your thoughts on operating on patients, say, with a BMI of 30, newly diagnosed diabetes that are not quite, you know, do not meet the criteria of BMI of 35?
That's a very good point, Chris. And we know that these procedures are very effective for patients with BMI of 35, so why wouldn't they be effective for a patient with BMI of 34, even lowest BMI of 30? In the spring of 2007, a consensus conference that included a large number of world experts in diabetes met with a group of surgeons to discuss this very issue and what role surgery may have as a specific treatment for type 2 diabetes. And this category was addressed, this lower BMI group between 30 and 35. And the general consensus that will soon be published was that that physicians should, you know, consider surgery as a potential option in this group.
One of the really important factors in the 30 to 34 group is this trade-off between the risks and complications of surgery versus the risks and complications of the primary disease of obesity. So I think, you know, those things have to be weighed carefully in that group.
You know, I think it's important, Rod. It brings up this notion that we have, we've used body mass index as the major gauge of severity of obesity. And while it is important, we're beginning to see that there are different subgroups of obese individuals, mm-hmm. diabetics, that may have quite severe obesity in this lower BMI range, and therefore should be at least eligible for some of these more effective, albeit riskier, but effective therapies for diabetes and obesity. Mm-hmm.